Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. I'm David Hudson Tuthill, assistant editor of Redefined. In this episode, Ron Matus, director of policy and public affairs at Step Up for Students, sits down with Florida State Representative Jennifer Sullivan, the incoming chair of the House Education Committee. What makes Sullivan unique is that she has risen to the chair of the Education Committee after herself being homeschooled as a child. Sullivan is a conservative Republican, but it may surprise some, given the caricatures of choice supporters, how strongly she articulates arguments about equity and opportunity, arguments shaped in part because of her own life experiences. This interview took place at the Excel in Education Conference in Washington, D.C. in early December. Thank you for listening and enjoy the interview.
Chair Sullivan, thank you so much for taking time out for us. We know you're moving a million miles an hour. Committee weeks are about to start up. Legislative session is just around the corner, so we're really grateful you could find some time for us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to have the conversation, have time to sit down and talk about the exciting things we have going on in the education space.
Cool. Well, I wanted to first bring up something that I think is fascinating about you, which is that you were homeschooled.
I was, yes.
I don't know this for sure, but I can't imagine that anywhere in the country, or in too many places around the country, there's somebody who has as key a policy role as you do, and in, certainly in a state like Florida, which is, we're cutting edge policy education-wise all the time, who was homeschooled. So I'm really curious what you think that background does to inform your policy perspective. How does being a homeschooler shape your policy worldview?
Well, I'm so grateful to have had parents who were so invested in me and setting me up for success. And not just me, but my three younger siblings as well. So I was the oldest of four. My dad worked very hard to provide for our family, and there were a lot of sacrifices we made so that my mom could stay home. And, you know, what was interesting is last year when I was at the Excel in Ed conference, we talked a lot about personalized learning, and I couldn't help but, as I was sitting there, think, that's what I've been doing the past 20 years. You know, in the home education movement, it is all about personalizing the learning around the student. And a lot of people don't know, but I did not learn how to read till I was 9.
I was hoping you would tell me a little bit about that. So it not only, being a homeschooler, not only shaped your policy role, but it shaped you personally.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it gave me the footing that I needed early on, whereas I probably would have been held back because of that third grade reading test and having to pass that.
Can you go into a little more detail? I mean, so you were a struggling reader?
Absolutely. So early on, I was a very struggling reader. It just did not compute. And I remember my mom, you know, we were working on the word, it was star, and we would go star, star. Are. Now put it together. What's the word? And I just couldn't say the word, and I couldn't get it together. And at the end of the day, my mom was crying. I was crying. I hated school. I was so frustrated. And she said, you know what? We're not going to focus on reading for a little bit. We're going to focus on some character development, and we're going to focus on math, and we're going to focus on some of the other aspects of your education. And we're going to focus on learning about government and doing, you know, different tours in the community and getting involved. And she always brought me with her to go vote and just a lot of other things. And as we did life, she read to me a lot. We would work on it, but not in a way where I even knew we were working on it. In a way where we were just doing life, and I was learning to read alongside her. And it completely clicked for me, and I haven't put down a book since. I love to read. You know, in high school, amongst my peers, whenever there were volunteers for reading, you know, I was the one who was not very cool and always would raise their hand and be like, I'll read, I'll do it. I love reading. You know, I fly through books. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about education, is because I've been able to reap the benefit of having a personalized education, where my parents were able to come in and say, hey, this is where you're excelling. Keep moving forward. We're not going to hold you back in these grade levels. Here's where you're behind, but here's what we're going to do to not make you hate the subject matter, but make you maybe change the way we're teaching it to you, or change the environment you're in when you're learning about it.
So because they knew you and they knew where you're at.
Absolutely.
And they knew how to motivate you and how to do this and had the flexibility to do it in a different way.
Absolutely.
You were able to become a very good reader, but just in a different route than would have happened otherwise.
Absolutely. Then it would have been in a traditional route. And so I'm so grateful for the flexibility that we had in that, and, you know, being the product of personalized learning and knowing how much I love to learn. I mean, my three life mottos are to love, to learn, and to lead. And I think, you know, we all have a call to love those around us. We need parents who are going to love their children, love them enough to spend time with them and doing their homework. And we need teachers who are going to love our kids, who are going to go that extra mile to really listen to what's going on in their life. And we need policymakers who are going to love being in this space, to love our children and be motivated to change policy and put them first out of a genuine love. And that's really where my love for this space comes from, is for our children, because I don't believe they're our future leaders. I think they're leaders today. Anyone who has ears around them, they have influence. And if you have influence and you're a leader, doesn't mean you're a good one, but it means you're a leader. And so if we can instill that into our students, to be leaders in their schools, to be leaders in their families, leaders in their community from a young age, to take self-responsibility and to be passionate and innovative and engaged in what they're learning, I think you will see a completely different society.
Should we be paying more attention to the homeschooling space? I don't know that people realize how much homeschooling has grown. In Florida alone, I think we're at 90,000 homeschoolers now, which, if that was a district, would be one of the biggest districts in Florida. And yet, you hardly ever hear about anything going on in this space. It's just so under the radar. At the same time, when, you know, we write about a little bit on Redefined, we hear about these really fascinating little homeschool co-ops and home education enrichment programs. It seems like there's a lot going on there, but you lived it. So are there other lessons that we can glean from homeschooling? Should we be paying more attention to it?
You know, I loved what Jeff Atwater, our previous CFO in the state of Florida, said a couple years ago, that if homeschoolers made up a school district, at that time it would have been the third largest school district in the state of Florida. And you really don't realize how many there are. And I think that's intentional. Parents don't want to be told what to do by government. And so they're not asking for anything and they're not wanting anything. And so I think probably why they go under the radar is because so much as policymakers of what we do involves our budget, right? Because it's the only constitutional requirement that we pass a balanced budget. And so we're looking at where our money is going, what we're funding, what we're spending, and the outcomes we're getting from that. And that's part of our education system because it's the second largest silo, at least in regards to the breakdown of the budget. We spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot on that space, and it's for an intended purpose, obviously, our students and wanting them to be set up for success. But I think maybe one of the reasons why you don't hear as much is because there aren't people writing about them unless it's in a negative way. And I think that when you talk to colleges and universities, some of their best performing students are homeschoolers. And I think the secret is because homeschoolers are taught very early on to be self-motivated and to be self-starters and to be self-disciplined. Those are qualities you need in college when you're at a four-year university to be set up for success, because your mom and dad aren't there to go tell you to do your homework. And there's always going to be fun things to do. And if you've been in this environment where you've never been taught how to be self-motivated or self-disciplined or to take responsibility for your own education, if there's things you don't understand or things you don't know, to, you know, how do you go about finding out those things so you can succeed and do well in your coursework, you are not going to perform well in college. Now, maybe you did in high school, maybe you have a great GPA, and so you get accepted, but then you get there and you wonder why we have so many struggling students. And I think a lot goes to what are the life skills that they're bringing to the table? Are they self-motivated? Are they self-disciplined? Do they know how to study on their own? And I think homeschoolers really learn that firsthand, those life skills. And I love how many co-ops and support groups and the FPA, the Florida Parent Educators Association, I had the privilege of being their commencement speaker for their graduation with over 4,000 people this May. They had just over 300 students, but over 4,000 people, which tells you how many other homeschoolers were there that weren't graduating, or the families and whatnot. And so, you know, I'm so proud of our homeschooling families, and I think it's important that we recognize as a state the value they add. And as we look into ESAs and as we look into some of these educational programs, I think it's important to make sure that we're not completely forgetting about them in view of the financial investment those parents are making in that choice. That there were a lot of sacrifices my family made. My parents didn't have money to send me to college. My parents didn't buy my vehicle. I started working in high school, and I did work as a waitress in a tea room. And you know what's interesting is that Senator Sasser today talked about how he was experiencing the millennials at his college when he was a president hadn't had real work experience, and how this was the first generation going to a higher institution that didn't have that experience. Well, I'm a millennial who did have that experience, but it's interesting how sometimes that can be criticized now that, oh, well, you were a waitress. Well, I think that was, you know, more of being disciplined and paying my own personal bills and being a responsible young adult, even in high school. And I think there's a lot of families that being a waiter or waitress is the way that they're making ends meet. And if they're doing so, I think it's noble that they're providing for their family. And so I think it's important that, you know, we don't stereotype and marginalize people who maybe don't have as highlighted positions in our society.
I think there's definitely a lot of myths still about homeschooling and homeschoolers. But one of the things that I find especially cool is how parents on their own through these networks cobble together ways to have their kids be educated. So with these co-ops and these enrichment programs, I see them saying, well, I can teach my kid this and this and this, but I don't have the expertise to do these other things. Let's all pull our resources together and find a way to get our kids to get that knowledge. And so they're finding all kinds of different avenues to bring into that educational mix. And
absolutely.
It really makes me think of ESAs and what can be possible, you know, where people can mix and match what they need a la carte for their kids. It seems like homeschoolers and homeschooling families are already doing that.
Absolutely, they are. And I think what's great is, you know, my siblings reap the benefits of homeschooling being a little more popular when they were, especially in high school. And so they were able to bring in a U.S. history teacher and someone who, you know, they were subject matter experts in that field and just had a passion and a love for teaching and learned firsthand. And they also reaped the benefits of Khan Academy. What an incredible free resource for homeschoolers and any students. I'm so excited about the partnership with College Board and the SAT prep. I told someone the other day as I was touring a high school, if they had had SAT prep through Khan Academy, I would have probably done a lot better on my SAT scores. You know, it used to be a lot harder when they put a 500-page book in front of you, and now you get to use Khan Academy to study. But I think there's so many neat resources that are coming available. I want to look at how we can make those resources, I don't want to say more readily available because they're there, but maybe more tangibly available to our students in public schools, because I think oftentimes we can spend a lot of money on a lot of programs based on certain lobbyists and contractors where we don't need to be spending more money. We need to be doing a better job of getting the right tools that are already readily available for our public school students into their hands, whether that's setting aside the time in the classroom to show them how to use them, or even teachers using Khan Academy in the classroom. I know Orange County has a required in their ELA 40 minutes a week, and the teacher can have flexibility in how she implements that 40 minutes, whether it's on one day or throughout the week, but a required 40 minutes that each student spends on Khan Academy, and they've seen great learning gains in the classes that they've done that.
I think everybody knows you're a school choice person. I don't know that our readers and our listeners know why you're a school choice person. I mean, there's so many people that arrive at school choice and embrace it for all kinds of different reasons. What is it for you?
So I think going back to being the product of choice, being the product of parents choosing to homeschool us, because to be quite honest, we wouldn't have had the money to move into the really nice neighborhood to go to the really nice public schools. We didn't have that luxury. My dad provided for us best he can, but especially early on in their marriage, you know, I was born when my mom was 21. So they were very young and we wouldn't have had that luxury. And so I feel like what's most misunderstood about choice is that people think, at least when I talk about choice, I'm only talking about, you know, the choice to go to private school or the choice to do Florida Virtual or the choice to homeschool. But I'm talking about choice within our public schools, because I've toured over 15 schools in my district in the last month. And I can tell you, one school you go to that's a traditional public school, you go 5 miles down the street, it is a completely different school. And it's the same system, and it's the same superintendent, but that choice was determined by zip code. And so something I supported was our open enrollment. So those nicer schools, or those schools that, you know, maybe are closer to where parents work, if there are open seats, they have that ability, not just by asking for a waiver, but through open enrollment from the get-go, being able to transfer their students there. So I think what we need is real choice, even amongst public schools, because what happens is the inequality. You know, the wealthier families, they get that choice in public education because they have the luxury of choosing the nicer homes or being able to afford those. Or maybe there's other sacrifices they make, or they have, you know, other luxuries that enable them to be in that nicer neighborhood. And you have other families who that's not an option for them. So they don't get the choice of even what public school they go to.
This is really interesting. So you're talking about choice from the standpoint of equity and opportunity. I don't know if you're talking about choice and competition.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that when you go to a system where you have more ESAs, which are education savings accounts, when we ultimately get there, which I think we will one day, I think you will have public schools, just like in our economy, where you see where there's competition, a better product is produced. And I think when you have public schools that are competing, you know, traditional public schools that are competing with charter schools, because charter schools are public schools, right, even though they try to make them like, you know, the stepchild of the system, they are public schools. I think that it's so important that you're giving parents that choice everywhere across the spectrum.
I think all those arguments for choice, personally, I think they're all valid, but I just really think it's interesting that you went to the equity and opportunity piece first. So you're a conservative Republican, you make no bones about it.
Absolutely.
And I think it's fair to say that choice as a whole is often perceived as a conservative policy. Is it?
You know, I don't think that it has to be. I think it can honestly be a unifying policy. So often in the legislature has been fighting for these choice programs or fighting for the tax scholarship program for low-income students and families. It grieves my heart that we have these students that are in these failing schools, that have been failing schools for years. They will start elementary school and they will finish that elementary school, and historically, it will stay a failing school. I mean, that is a hopeless situation to go into. And the fact that we aren't willing to be bold, to really dig into why are we accepting of that status quo? Because those students deserve better, and it's our responsibility to make sure that they have the best education that they can get, that they are set up for success. Mm-hmm. And their zip code and their parents' income should not determine that success. And I think that that's something that gets missed in the conversation. I really question the individuals who would align themselves of why they're fighting to keep those students in those schools. Because what is their end game for that student? Because I want that student to break the generational poverty cycle and to be the best they can be and to be an entrepreneur or to graduate from a four-year university. I mean, I want them to dream it, believe it, and achieve it. It is so frustrating when some of those legislators that come from those districts or come from those communities are the very ones voting against the policies that would help break that generational cycle.
How can we change that? I mean, I think some of this does boil down to perception, which personally I feel is totally mm-hmm. wrong. I don't think it's left or right. I think it's beyond that. It's a parent's right to choose. Mm-hmm. It's between a parent and a child, and it's not a place where you ought to go. It is often perceived as this conservative idea, and I think some folks base their judgments on that perception. What can we do to like get past
it? I think
that?
we have to tell our story better. We have to get better at framing the issue. We have to do more talking about our why behind our action. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can do that, we can change the culture and change the mentality. And I think we all we need to continue to challenge the lawmakers that aren't supportive of these policies yet, challenge them to kind of talk to why, what's their why, and better understand where they're coming from, where they're at, what makes up their story. Because I think if you can better understand where someone's coming from and where they're going, you can better partner with them. It's not enough to just be against someone or be against something. To me, you need to be for something. I think that when we're willing to reach across the aisle and have a conversation, which is a two-way street, then you can do far more together than you can divided. And so, you know, I'm hopeful as chair of the education committee to be able to build bridges and to work with the conservatives and the liberals, the Republicans, the Democrats, and everything in between. At the end of the day, have a unified mission of helping students, and I think making an education system that is centered around the student. Because I think when you make decisions that are just based on the teachers, you'll lose the students. Or if you make decisions that are just based on testing, you'll lose the students. Or if you make decisions that are just based on districts and school board members and administrators, you'll lose the students. But if you focus on the students, it will be good for teachers. If you focus on the students, it will be good for parents. If you focus on the students, the effects are positive for everyone involved.
I know it's still a time where people are putting together their agendas for the session. There's a lot that's still up in the air, but the session's not that far away. Can you share at all any ideas about what your priorities are going to be, or are there any particular things you're going to be focused on?
So I mentioned that I've toured over 15 public schools, traditional public schools, and one private school so far. I've got a lot more on my list, but those are the ones in my district so far, just in the last month I've gone to. And so right now, I'm doing more of almost a listening tour, right? I'm in my community, I'm going to students, I'm going to teachers, I've met with all the elementary, middle, and high school principals that are in my district in Lake County, and really heard from them, what are your challenges and what are your opportunities? And so right now, I've been taking the time to really do a lot of listening, because the solutions that we bring to the table, I want to be solutions to their everyday problem. From what I've gleaned thus far, I think that we need to look at our accountability system and make sure that we're really rewarding teachers, schools, and administrators that are making the right choices for students. Because I talked to many principals that they know what the best thing to do for that student is, and they're choosing to do it, but they're not rewarded for it. And I think when we have different programs that aren't rewarding...
tweaks to school grades or something like that?
I think as soon as you start saying that something is off the table for consideration, that concerns me. Because I don't think that anything should be so perfect or anything should be so guarded that we're not willing to reevaluate to make sure in today that it's still serving our students. I think that we need to be more aware, though, of these little fiefdoms that we're trying to protect. And current practices that, as we heard today, came out of where our society was 150 years ago in the workforce that we were trying to meet the demands of 150 years ago. And looking at what are our workforce needs of today, how can we make sure that we're educating those students well to meet those needs that are centered around setting them up for success, and making sure that the teachers and the principals that are setting those students up for success are being rewarded for their hard work. But there's certainly...
like you spent a ton of time in district schools over the past few
years. I have. And because I know...
Which is also, you know, that's counter to many of the school choice stereotypes that you want to privatize the system and tear it down, but it sounds like
right. You're
spending an awful lot of time in those places if you want to tear them down.
Well, you said it. But I think that a lot of people have misunderstood me. And I think I've been misunderstood in the media as well. I am very conservative, and I'm all for school choice. But I am not against our public schools. Public schools are where the significant portion of students go to school. And if that's where our students are, then maybe that's where the reform needs to take place. And so I think it's so important that nobody is so narrow-minded that they're only focused on public school or only focused on private school or only focused on homeschoolers. I take a very broad approach to education and through the lenses of choice. I'm looking forward to being able to work on policies that expand choice, that reward good teachers, give principals and administrators the flexibility they need to be able to educate their student population with their own unique abilities and struggles. And I think the more that we can get bureaucrats and regulations out of the way so that we can let teachers truly teach and be student-centered, the better our outcomes will be.
As I understand it, you do not have a college degree. You've spent some time getting some credits for college, but you're not there with your degree. And there's been a little bit of a to-do about that, about whether that is appropriate or right for somebody who's going to be a key player in education policy in Florida. What's your take on that? Does having a degree, is that important? Should you have a degree? Can you carry out your job well without one?
So something I often tell students when I have the privilege of speaking to them is don't be defined by your age or your titles. Be defined by your work ethic. And I think it's so important that we don't define people by their degrees either. I think that we define people by their work ethic and their character and what they've shown over time. That is a far better way to evaluate someone's perhaps what you would call qualifications and, you know, what they've done with what they've been given. And so I have not claimed to have a college degree. Right. I have not claimed to be a certain percentage of the way there.
Right.
I took a class through Girls State when I was in high school, a dual enrollment class that I got a government credit for from TCC. And I worked for 5 years saving up money to be able to do Liberty University online. I actually only got to take one class from them. Well, one that counted as credit. One was their own class. It was too expensive for me to stay there because, like I said, my parents couldn't afford to send me to college.
One of your big challenges for college completion was money.
Absolutely. Now, I will say I was really blessed that once I got elected to the Florida House, I was given a full ride to Regent University. And so I started online studies in business management and took classes there for a couple semesters and then got married, which I was very grateful for. And I will tell you that this part-time position in the Florida legislature, if you want to make meaningful change, really requires your full attention, your full-time attention. And so between being married and being here and every year being given more and more responsibilities, I've put my studies on hold for this time. And I will finish my degree at one time. But for today, I'm really focused on making sure that I have the skills that I need to be able to chair this committee well, to lead well, to invest in others well, to listen to what people are telling you, and to not think that you know it all. Because I think oftentimes the people that go into this process with the perception that they know it all are the people that are the hardest to work with. And I think that there's a lot to be learned from going in our public schools and a lot to be learned. I am so excited about the opportunity to lead in this space and to bring my passion and the experience that I have. And, you know, I worked in youth development for 5 years, traveling the country, teaching students how to be engaged in the political process. And so, you know, I have a little experience teaching and definitely a lot of experience in choice in education. And I'm excited to bring that to the table.
Awesome. Well, we're excited that you're chair of this committee. We look forward to great things you're going to do as chair. And we're really grateful that you spent all this time with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.